Family Sanctuary is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Family Sanctuary with Marianne Jepson and Peggy Hartshorn are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Welcome to the Family Sanctuary. I am Peggy Hartshorn, president of Heartbeat International, your host for today's program. And Heartbeat advances life-affirming pregnancy help around the world. We actually have a guest today who, a powerful, powerful guest, Monica Miller, a friend of mine and also a national pro-life leader. She's the founder and director of Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, which actually has, we have a program that we've done with Monica that you can find in the archives about the work of the Citizens for a Pro-Life Society, which has really done phenomenal work in memorializing the unborn children, those that have been buried, those who have been found after their abortions. That's a powerful story that you can find on the website abortionmemorials.com. And in one of Monica's books, she is an author. She has a master's degree and a PhD from Marquette University in Milwaukee in theology. She is a professor of religious studies at Madonna University in Michigan. And in addition to that, as a writer and author, she is also a pro-life activist. So what a phenomenal combination, Monica. And I should mention also, she is a wife and mother. She's the wife of Edmund Miller, founder of Guadalupe Partners, and she has three beautiful children, Bernadette, Patrick, and Joseph. So what a beautiful life, combining the shall we say, the reflective and the active and motherhood and teaching and being involved in one of the greatest calls of our time, which is the pro-life movement. So thank you, Monica. Thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you for all that you are doing as well.
Well, thank you. You know, in a previous program with Monica, we have focused, as I mentioned, on commemorating those unborn children and, of course, the healing power of that for our society and for the women and the men and the abortionists and all those involved in abortion. So you know, somebody may say, well, it's a kind of interesting, Monica, that you've written a book on these abandoned children that are now buried. It's called Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars. But you've also written about the subject of sexuality and authority in the Catholic Church.
Right.
And
yes.
Your latest book is The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church. And it's interesting to me because these two things go intimately together for me as well. The call in the pro-life movement to help protect and defend the unborn children, and at the same time, a call to help women understand their true dignity. And understand the power that they have as a being created women by God. So that's the area of your work that we want to focus on for today's program. What is this thing that John Paul II called the genius of women or the feminine genius? What is this thing that women apparently are so not understanding that has led us to, I believe, their lack of connection to their unborn child, the lack of understanding that true significance of their gift of fertility. Tell us about that feminine genius. What is their real dignity?
I think that when we talk about this thing called the feminine genius, we're really looking at the essence of femininity. What does it mean to be a woman? And does it matter, of course? And of course, according to Judeo-Christianity, it certainly matters. Even according to natural law, it matters. My argument one of the arguments that I make in my book, The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, is that women are the center of human communion. And I will say that in a way in which, dare I say it, but in a way in which men are not. And I give a commentary on the second chapter of Genesis, where it is said that God has created Adam, first man, but it is not good that the man be alone. So that is not only a biblical statement, but it is an anthropology. It's what does it mean to be human? And we have a statement there that informs us of the answer. What it means to be human is not to be alone. So we know then that the human being is made for communion and for the antithesis or the opposite, even shall we say the enemy, of authentic human living is isolation, alienation, and this thing that I would refer to as a radical autonomy. And we see in the second chapter of Genesis the solution, the divine solution that had been intended from all time, really, is the creation of the what is referred to often in English translations of Scripture, the helpmate, right? That the woman is the helpmate. The New American Bible improves on that a little bit by saying the suitable partner for the man, right? Mm-hmm. I will create the suitable partner for the man. Helpmate in the old English, helpmeet. What is really going on there? It sounds like, see, there's the problem in our interpretation of Scripture. At first cursory reading, we come away with the I argue the erroneous conclusion that for the woman to be the helpmate or even suitable partner or whatever, that she's the assistant, that the male ergo has the primary project, whatever that may turn out to be, and that the woman is there to help him out with it, mm-hmm. right, to assist him, like a teacher's assistant or something. That is quite wrong, and doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of the profundity of what's going on there in Genesis chapter 2. The word that gets translated often gets translated as a suitable partner or helpmate. Is in the Aramaic, the Semitic language, is Izar, E-E-Z-E-R. And what is the Izar? The Izar would be described in a couple of different ways, which I think informs us on what we're talking about here. The Izar would be the person who puts a tourniquet on the a wound of someone who would otherwise bleed to death. The Izar is the person who gives water, rescues, right, somebody who is dying of thirst by providing them with the water that they need to live. So that tells us that the
creation, a lifesaver. It sounds like
a lifesaver, exactly.
Lifesaver.
She saves the original man from that situation that was not good. In other words, she rescues him from original loneliness. What does she do for the male? The woman pulls, she brings him into the arena of human communion. And with doing that, she confers on the male his identity, his purpose. He knows who he is and what he is for. He is no longer in isolation and in that deadly alienation, so contrary to authentic human living. So as we see in Genesis chapter 2, with woman is the creation of marriage. For this reason, after Eve is created, and by the way, there's this beautiful celebration. This one at last, right?
Right, sure.
This one at last, right?
It's he's very
my
happy.
Bone and flesh is my flesh, okay? None of those mm-hmm. animals, he knows, you know, the parade of the animals that goes, you know, I'm not like them. I know what I am not like,
mm-hmm.
okay? And that I cannot have full satisfaction and full communion with the animal kingdom. We share the planet with these creatures, but they are not like me. I am different, but I don't know yet what I am. I know what I am not. So with the creation of the female, the original Adam is projected into his identity. He has an identity conferred on him and his purpose. For this reason, then, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife. And even the word to cling, you know, it's not hold or embrace, but when you cling to something, there's that sense of, I must hold on for dear life,
mm-hmm.
right? To cling to his wife, and then the two shall become one flesh. So they have created a new moral center in the universe in their unity, which can only be done by the male and the female coming together and to create that new unity. But the directionality is he must make the move. A man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, as if she's the tree branch that he can hold on to. She's the anchor that stabilizes him.
Wow. Right? Well, Monica, as you know, our program focuses in on how within the family we learn our true dignity.
Right.
And I'm thinking, how do we convey these ideas in our family? How can we... mothers should be talking about this to their daughters, right?
Exactly.
A husband should recognize this about their wives and affirm their wives for the phenomenal role that they play in being, I love your term, the center of human communion. And yet it seems in our families today we're misunderstanding, as you mentioned, it's the faulty idea of feminism that somehow women are just like men.
And, well, yeah, and well, right. But here, I think here is the ultimate curse that has befallen on us. The thrust of the radical feminist movement is really to return back to a radical autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are fighting is an ideology, Peggy, or a philosophy that says the primary value, what we must protect, is radical individualism.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a self and to protect our dignity as persons, we must in fact be disconnected. We must be our own selves, and we have to not identify our dignity or our worth by being connected to others. It's really the reverse of everything that's really authentically human. And I even argue in some of the speeches that I give on the subject of abortion, study Roe, the decision, the actual written decision of Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade, with the Magna Carta of abortion in the United States of America, it is not just a legal opinion delivered by a Supreme Court. What Roe versus Wade really is articulating is a philosophy. Roe versus Wade is an ethic. And I call it the ethics of isolation, where abortion, in a sense, is the ultimate facilitator of the breakdown of human communion. And it begins with the woman, who is the center of human communion. But what happens when, in the ideology of abortion, and then, of course, in the practice of abortion, is that the woman steps outside of the sphere of the body of human communion, and when she does that, the whole culture and society really starts to fall apart. She disconnects herself from the father of her children. Even in Roe versus Wade, husbands don't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as husbands in Roe v. Wade. They are invisible. They have no rights. They don't exist. Right there you see that Roe versus Wade does not honor the meaning of marriage, the meaning of parenthood, and the meaning of the family.
Right.
But it's because in Roe versus Wade, it's the woman who has handed over in that decision the ultimate right to disconnect, sever herself from the rest of the human family, even to the point where she does what? She disconnects, she casts out of herself, and thusly, she casts out of her own body, her own child, and right there you see the dissolution of human communion. But it begins with her. And so, in a way, the woman is placing the man back into that instant
isolation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Back into that, what is not good, it is not good for the man to be alone.
Right.
But we don't believe that anymore.
Sure. Well, if you've just joined the program and wondering who is this wonderful woman who's articulating such profound concepts, our guest today is Monica Miller, PhD. She has a master's and PhD in theology from Marquette University in Milwaukee. She is currently the professor of religious studies at Medina University in Michigan. She is a pro-life activist, founder and director of Citizens for Pro-Life Society, wife and mother. She is a writer, a speaker, has some phenomenal books, Abandoned, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars, and also, most recently, The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, in which she argues that our authority comes from this being the center of relationship,
right.
Being, in a sense, as you said, the lifesaver of man. So some beautiful concepts, Monica. I'm thinking we talked before the program about the result, some of the results you were getting into just now in our society from this idea of radical autonomy, that self is all that matters. And I can remember one time someone asked me, what do you think is the root cause of abortion? And I had to think and think. I said, I think it's selfishness. And you've put it even better. It's radical autonomy,
it's the only thing
that matters.
Radical autonomy is there to serve the ultimate end of abortion, and that is power.
Right.
It's about gaining power over others.
And women, as you said, this feminine genius that we have, this way that we were created as the branch, as you said, on which men can cling as the center of human communion. In a sense, women are the power that requires men to be in relationship, not to be alone.
Yes, exactly, Peggy. And when women in our culture, we see it in particular. There are certain segments of our culture that have been hit really hard. Certain segments of our society that have been hit really hard by this ethics of isolation, where 90%, for example, in the African American community, 80 to 90% of all pregnancies are out of wedlock pregnancies.
Yes,
and that means that the man is not in the home. That's the decimation right there of all that is truly valuable when it comes to the family unit. And so the autonomy of the male who will beget children but never father them and never be in the home honoring his wife and putting his labor, his work, to the service of his wife and his children.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the recipe for poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It's the recipe for crime, because there's no reason for wanting to uphold a culture based on values and order and law when you're not projected into the future. Mm-hmm. Everything is in immediate for the sake of an immediate satisfaction, whether it's a sexual satisfaction or even other kinds of sensuality. And this, I see it all the time in my work, getting the men into the home and putting their labor to the service of their children and their wives. That is really where our society needs to start concentrating its efforts.
And it's women who can do this.
Yes,
by
women, yes,
understanding
women
and requiring, sure,
into that relationship.
Exactly.
And demand it.
Yeah.
Before they have sex, before they start begetting children, the male must be held responsible and do the masculine thing.
Sure. And if women truly understood what you were explaining, Monica, about how they were created as being the lifesaver of men, so men are not alone, they're not in this radical autonomy, that they need to require that. I was thinking of how old-fashioned it seems, and yet how truly wise it was that in the old days, you know, women wouldn't accept a proposal from a man, or a family wouldn't allow a man to court their daughter until he showed that he could support her, that they could have a home, you know.
Otherwise, I mean, the male remains a juvenile. Mm-hmm. He never grows up. Unless he's able to take on masculine responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And put his labor, his service, his energies, his creativity to the service of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's destructive energy. It's dissipated and leads to all kinds of societal problems. And the woman is left, you know, in the lurch. I mean, just even the low self-esteem that comes with all of that. Where you know, women will be giving themselves away so easily to the man, thinking that that's the way to actually keep them involved, but it's a trick. It doesn't work.
Right? Just the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
The opposite is the result.
And I'm thinking how in our families today, I'm sure there are many families listening, people from families that are intact, where husbands and wives are trying to live this out and trying to demonstrate this for their children and talk to their children about it. But we've got so many broken families today.
Yeah.
That it's difficult sometimes that young people don't have role models of people who are leading their lives as God's plan was laid out for us there in Genesis. How can we bring women to this vision of their own dignity?
Well, we have to start talking about it. I mean, that's the first place. I think churches need to make this a priority. It's not just a matter of economics, and it's not just a matter of discrimination and injustice in all kinds of different places, but that churches need to really focus on this particular issue. I think that we, you know, in all segments of our culture, and it's not just the African American culture; it's everywhere. It's, in fact, you know, not to get off onto a tangent, but it's really the thing that has led to the gay rights movement. You can't blame those with same sex attraction for going in the direction that they're going, when basically the heterosexual community doesn't practice marriage either. Maybe we need to be looking at that first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And saying prayers and putting some effort into healing the family unit. It is not good that the man should be alone, right? And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.
Mm-hmm.
That is natural law and a divinely ordained design for the human being, and ultimately for society. We need to take that very seriously.
Absolutely. I know there are many, many programs, of course, in our parishes today that focus in on marriage. Marriage Encounter, my husband and I were involved in that for at least 15 years, probably more, as a team couple. And so I know there are many ways that we are trying to challenge couples to model this. Some of our pre-Cana programs now, I'm sure, are focusing theology of the body, I'm thinking, is a
right.
Wonderful avenue, because, of course, that focuses solely, not solely, but centrally on relationship. I was thinking one of our programs at St. Gabriel recently was focusing in on theology of the body. We talked about how do we challenge young people who think of themselves as autonomous. They hear all this about relationship when they're studying something like theology of the body, and they can't relate to it very well. You know, well, I'm just a separate individual. And one of the ways we can challenge them is by saying, well, you know, you were conceived in someone's womb. You were in your mother's womb. You were born of another person. That's
right.
Not something that you chose.
Of your existence, you're in relation.
Right. You were in relationship from the moment of your conception.
Right.
You didn't choose that. You weren't autonomous there. You didn't choose the day you were born. You didn't even choose your name.
Right.
All of that comes from relationship. So I'm thinking in our families of ways that we can try to make this concrete for our children and for our young women, that we are created for relationship.
Well, ultimately, Peggy, this is not going to be the work of the government. It's not going to be the work of our educational institutions as much as it ought to be. But it really is the work of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And the church has to preach it. And the church has to require that it be practiced. Mm-hmm. The church has to enable believing Christians to take marriage seriously. The ultimate problem is embedded in this idea that sex is not just for marriage, and we have to reverse that. We have to insist sex is for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Sex is a marital, nuptial experience.
Beautiful gift. And unfortunately, yeah. Monica, we're going to have to make that our final emphasis because we're just about out of time. Thank you so much for sharing. For those of you who are interested in Monica's wonderful ideas and beautiful way of putting them, most beautiful ways of putting them, her recent book, The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, by Emmaus Road Publishers. Thank you so much, Monica. And you all have been listening to AM 820 St. Gabriel Catholic Radio with archives at stgabrielradio.com. We're broadcast, the Family Sanctuary is broadcast at 12:30 every Monday and 2 o'clock on Sundays. So please join us again to strengthen our families and make them sanctuaries of life as God intended.
Family Sanctuary is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Family Sanctuary with Marianne Jepson and Peggy Hartshorn are available at stgabrielradio.com.
Parents, you don't need the latest gizmo slang or clothes to be a perfect parent, because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.